I want to continue with Dogen, but I want to, I'm going to sort of, it's good that Ruby showed up by accident tonight with my help. And she talked about the compassion in her talk last week. And I thought I would bring in something that Dogen said about it. The first thing I want to say, though, is that I've mentioned it a number of times before, I think. I'm sure I have. But there is a very close relationship between Manjushri's sword of wisdom and Avalokiteshvara, or Kanseon's heart of compassion. On many altars in Zen temples, on the altar, instead of a figure of the Buddha, you'll see a figure of Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. And he's carrying a sword. one day, I had a kind of hunch about something. And so I went to my teacher and I said, is there a close relationship, or even is it the same thing, Manjushri's sword of wisdom and Kanseon's heart of compassion? It wouldn't seem that it would be, because we separate wisdom and compassion in our minds. But he said, yes, it's true. There's a very close relationship between wisdom and compassion in Buddhism. And then he said, he didn't really talk so much, but he would explain things just very quickly, if at all. His explanation was, well, you know, one edge of Manjushri's sword gives life, and the other edge takes it away. So that was his explanation of what was similar between wisdom and compassion. That one edge, or one part we can say, or one aspect of wisdom is to give life, bring things to life. And one aspect of wisdom is to take something away, to take life away. It doesn't seem very wise to take life away, but I think we can all think of situations where taking the life of something away may actually be wise. Do you think about yourselves or other people? And so when we consider that from the standpoint of compassion, usually we can understand, oh, compassion, yeah, I can understand that compassion would bring life, could bring something to life, bring something, you give birth to something, you know. That's how compassion works. But how is it compassion if it takes life away? And I think that this is a very important question for us. Because actually when we're sitting Zazen, we are actively taking away the life of delusion. And if we could say that the life of delusion was completely taken away, that would be an ultimate compassionate act. If we could take away the life of all ignorance, and therefore all of the effect ignorance has on the world, we could say that is a compassionate act. If we could take away the life of all greed, all causing of harm, we would say that's a compassionate act. And the person who can do that would have to be very, very wise. So I think you can see the relationship there. And we have to be very discerning to know what are we bringing to life and what are we taking away. If we bring one thing to life, might we be taking away another life-affirming part Or are we taking away something that opposes life, that brings harm into the world? When we're sitting on our cushions, sitting Zazen, every time we bring ourselves back from our deluded fantasy, that's wisdom functioning. And that's a compassionate action towards ourselves. Because all the fantasizing in the world actually won't help us. And it won't help us become clear so that we can function and act in the world with wise hearts, with the heart of Manjusri and the mind of Kanzeyon, Ravalokiteshvara. So whether you know it or not, we're actually practicing the wielding of Manjusri's sword and Kanzeyon's heart every time we sit Zazen, just simply by following the instructions. Nothing fancier than that. But also nothing smaller than that. It's quite a large thing that we're doing in our own modest way. So I want to read this one sentence of Dogen's, because I'm beginning to really think that one sentence is enough. We don't really need a lot more than that. Kind of greed, you know.
Painter or something instead of a writer?
Well, I don't know what an airbrush painter is. How do you paint
the air? Paint the air.
Paint the air.
There you go, yeah.
Oh. How did I do?
You're great.
Thank you. You are too. Know that when the way-seeking mind is aroused within, there is immediate freedom from fame and gain. Know, K-N-O-W, know that when the way-seeking mind is aroused within, there is immediate freedom from fame and gain. So, Dogen likes to use this phrase, fame and gain, but just think of gaining ideas, okay? The idea of getting something, attaining something. Know that when the way-seeking mind is aroused within, there is immediate freedom from fame and gain. And that is a very important sentence. Dogen is saying, when we simply arouse the way-seeking mind inside of ourselves, the mind that really seeks the way of awakening, and the way of truth and reality, simply arousing that banishes the gaining mind. Because we can't hold those two things at the same time. As soon as we reconnect with the heart and the mind that seeks the way of awakening, we no longer have use for that deluded mind. It no longer is entertaining, it's not interesting, and mostly, we become detached from it. Simply by remembering our way. Simply by remembering our path. Probably the most famous example of a Buddhist teacher talking about this was when someone asked the Dalai Lama, "Don't you ever have a lustful thoughts?" And he laughed and he said, I think I did once in a dream." And they said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, in the dream, some other part of me said to me, 'You're a monk,' and I woke right up." So he couldn't maintain, right? He couldn't maintain thought B because thought A showed up. Mm-hmm. Simply. It became the quality and the content of his mind. So when we're sitting zazen and we're getting lost in our thoughts or feelings or something like that, and we're not actually being present, as soon as we remember, oh, my path isn't the path of delusion. I'm not here to nourish delusion. I'm here to nourish awakening. As soon as we remember that and bring ourselves back, that's it. In that very moment, we become free from that deluded, gaining, ignorant mind. And it becomes weaker. And what becomes stronger is our ability to actually practice the way of freedom, which is what we're doing anyway. Why we come and do it? Know that when the way-seeking mind is aroused, simply aroused, within, there is immediate freedom from feeling the cave. That's how strong the way-seeking mind is. And I'll remind you that Dogen also said that between our aspiration, which is the arousing of our way-seeking mind, the mind that wants freedom from suffering for ourselves and all other beings, that between the simple aspiration or arousing of that mind and our practice and our realization and even ultimate nirvana, there's no gap. So that's why Dogen says, in that very moment of arousal, there is freedom. What I love about it is that this will sound a little funny, but it's self-arousal. It's self-arousing self on behalf of the way, instead of self-arousing self on behalf of the fantasy. Right? It's not self-arousing self thinking, "Oh, he's really cute. You know, she's. I really like to get together with her." Or, don't you think it would be really great if I was a famous rock star and everybody called my name and then, you know, I could go home with anybody I wanted to and have a lot of money and live in a fancy place? That's self-arousal, but it's not self-arousing self on the path of freedom. It's self-arousing self on the path of delusion. And what's wonderful is that we can actually choose. That's the thing that I love most about it, is that we have the ability to make a choice about what kind of self-arousal we want. It sounds funny, doesn't it? So I think I told you once, I was driving and Shirley was next to me, and somebody did something in traffic, and it just really ticked me off. And she felt me press the accelerator down. I mean, she didn't feel that. She felt the car go. She didn't feel me press the accelerator. She could tell I had because the car sped up. And she said to me, "Peter, remember your vows." And my foot came off the pedal.
She knows you.
She knew. That's the card. If you're going to play a card with me, play that card. So my foot automatically, it's like, foot came off the pedal. I'm not going to get to be the asshole I want to be. I really want to be a jerk, but I'm not going to get to, because I'm sitting next to a Buddha who said, "Hey Buddha, is this what you want for your life?" So that's the arousing of way-seeking mind. And sometimes we can do it for other people, but mostly we have to do it for ourselves. Every time that we practice it on our cushions, every single time, that voice, that Buddha voice inside of us gets stronger. And the response is immediate, simply because we can't hold those two thoughts at the same time. So we get to choose. I'm not saying that if we choose, let's say, self-arousal B, we're bad people. Because we're just human. We have to learn what is the most helpful thing for us and what isn't. But it is amazing how quickly way-seeking mind can take over, and how clear we can be, just like that. People think, oh, if I sit zazen for, you know, a day or a month or a year or 10 years or 20 years, that's not what it's about. It's about allowing ourselves to actually hear the Buddha when she speaks inside of us and strengthening the voice of the Buddha inside of us. So that when the Buddha says, what are you doing? We actually can hear it. That's freedom. It is not freedom that comes from anywhere outside of us. It is not transcendence. It is presence. It is not going somewhere else. It is showing up here in the form that we really want to be, because it's the form that ends, or can end, suffering. And then if we have an opportunity to practice that with other people, there's huge support. It's one of the reasons that I've been talking about Kinhin for the last 2 weeks. So that you actually realize you're actually doing this together. You're actually in relationship together. You actually have established a relationship. You have the ability to maintain a relationship. And if we can practice that together, that's collective awakening. That's all of us waking all of us, all at the same time. I don't see any other way for us to face the challenges that are right here in front of us right now. I really don't see any other way. There is no one person who's going to do it. That is not going to happen. Nobody's going to fly out of the clouds, or nobody's going to suddenly rise up out of the earth. That's not going to happen. It really is up to each of us together. And that's the key. Each of us waking up together. Each of us helping the other to remember our way-seeking mind and the path of that. And then I think, with some luck, we have an opportunity. But at the very least, we can live a life based on that kind of clarity, and that is a compassionate life. And that's where wisdom and compassion meet, exactly on the point of that sword and in the depth of that heart. Exactly the same thing.